So I try to.
These are the sounds of stories being written, being drawn, being painted, and being sung. And this is the art and design of storytelling.
As a ghost to me.
Artificial intelligence is a hot topic in so many fields and disciplines, particularly those that involve creative thinking and creative making. How will it change the way we work? How do we keep up with it all to remain relevant? Will AI take the place of our creative jobs? Now, this is a topic big enough for its own series, but I knew I wanted to collaborate with AI to some degree on this series versus trying to ignore the elephant in the room. So I leaned on it at the beginning of the process when trying to determine what questions to ask the guests in this series. ChatGPT gave me a long list of questions that I narrowed down and placed in a sequence that I believed would make sense. While I create questions without the help of AI all the time, I wanted to make sure I wasn't missing or forgetting anything important about the area of storytelling, as I needed a uniform set of questions that would work from the first guest to the final guest. I'm going to lean on AI again at this point in the process to provide me with a more well-rounded understanding of the intersections of technology and storytelling. Now, I asked politely, of course, because you never know when the machines are keeping tabs on this sort of thing. Here's the prompt. Please provide one paragraph summary about the ways in which technology enables stories to be told better, faster, or in unique ways. Here's what it came up with. Technology has revolutionized storytelling by offering unprecedented avenues for creativity, speed, and engagement. Through digital platforms and tools, stories can now be disseminated instantly to global audiences, transcending geographical boundaries. Enhanced multimedia capabilities, including virtual reality, VR, and augmented reality, AR, provide immersive experiences that blur the line between fiction and reality, deepening audience engagement. Additionally, artificial intelligence algorithms analyze vast amounts of data to personalize content, ensuring that stories resonate with diverse audiences on a profound level. Furthermore, collaborative storytelling platforms enable collective creativity, empowering individuals to co-create narratives in real time. In essence, technology has democratized storytelling, offering storytellers unparalleled opportunities to captivate, connect, and inspire audiences worldwide. Oh, she's good. So let's dive a little deeper, ChatGPT. Please provide a list of 5 ways that creative storytellers leverage different technologies to help them in their storytelling efforts. Okay, so number 1. Virtual reality, VR, and augmented reality, AR. Creative storytellers utilize VR and AR technologies to immerse audiences in their narratives, allowing them to experience stories in a more interactive and visceral manner. Whether it's exploring fictional worlds in VR games or overlaying digital elements onto the real world through AR apps, these technologies enhance storytelling by providing unique sensory experiences. Number 2. Social media and digital platforms. Storytellers leverage social media platforms, websites, and digital publishing tools to distribute their content to a global audience instantly. Platforms like Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube offer storytellers the ability to share short-form videos, images, and micro-stories, engaging with audiences in real time and building communities around their narratives. Number 3. Data analytics and personalization. With advancements in data analytics and AI, storytellers can analyze audience preferences and behaviors to tailor content to individual tastes. By understanding audience demographics, interests, and engagement patterns, creators craft more relevant and compelling stories that resonate with their target audience on a deeper level, leading to increased viewer retention and loyalty. Number 4. Interactive storytelling platforms. Creative storytellers leverage interactive storytelling platforms and tools to engage audiences in co-creating narratives. Platforms like Twine and Inkle Writer enable users to choose their own adventure, allowing them to make decisions that shape the direction of the story. By giving audiences agency in the storytelling process, creators foster deeper immersion and emotional investment in the narrative. And finally, number 5, motion capture and animation. Motion capture technology and animation software empower storytellers to bring characters and worlds to life in ways that were previously unimaginable. By capturing actors' movements and expressions in real time and translating them into animated characters, creators can imbue their stories with heightened realism and emotional depth, fostering stronger connections between audiences and the narrative's protagonists. While AI is very good at regurgitating information already available on the web, it can't create a story with a real human experience behind it, one that's totally nuanced and specific and uniquely human in its existence. Only a human can do that. So now I'm going to ask the 9 creative humans a similar question specific to their creative practice. Can you discuss the intersection of technology and storytelling in your field, and how advancements may influence the way you approach narrative in your projects? Their answers provided me with some really wonderful insights that I hadn't thought of, as well as conversations that veered richly into more nuanced topics, often told through story and anchored to personal experiences.
Depending on which platform you are launching your project on, it really limits what you can do with your textures, with your the level of detail in your geometry, et cetera, et cetera. So sometimes, like I'm working on a project right now that is going to be launched on a VR platform, which means that we have very, very limited draw calls. And what a draw call is essentially is how much the computer can handle essentially to be able to render the project in a way that actually works and like is a smooth experience. So, you know, taking that into consideration, you really have to decide, okay, so I can't really do 100% realism because that's going to have like really, really high resolution textures, which the VR machine cannot handle. I have to decide now which I have to go stylized, which means that it's not going to be realistic. It's going to be somewhere in between like a Fortnite type of game with like very muted kind of colors, not muted colors, but like it just won't have the same kind of realism. And with that, you kind of indicate what the overall mood is, because style plays a lot into the mood of the experience. And then from there, you kind of have to understand, okay, well, if this is the mood that I'm going for, and this is the style that I'm going for, what's next? So in terms of like the storytelling aspect, I think using that to indicate where your story is going to go, essentially. Also, like technology moves so fast in this area that, you know, from one day to the next, like advancements in graphics cards and softwares. So I have to keep up to date with that as well. I usually have to upgrade my system like every 2 to 3 years just to be able to keep up with all of the updates and just run at an optimal level as well. So yeah, I think the approach definitely relies on the platform in terms of narrative. And then from there, you can kind of decide and go into different storytelling methods.
And maybe can I ask you a bit about your process at this point as well, like from a technological standpoint, for you personally, do you start the initial ideation phase and the rough sketches and all of that on paper, or is that all done digitally as well?
Yeah, sometimes I will do research online, like go on Wikipedia or something and just write down a bunch of information on that. So like for one project I was doing this like Sulu-esque operating theater, like Victorian operating theater. So I just, got my paper and pen, and I just went on Wikipedia looking up Call of Cthulhu games and like all that kind of stuff, and just kind of, wrote it all out. I did some initial sketches just in my notebook, and then from there I will gather references online and make a PureRef board, which is just literally like a storyboard, not storyboard, but like a mood board kind of thing, and have like different sections of like lighting for like level of realism, or the particular mood that I'm going for, like the level of like how lived in is this environment? Is it derelict? Is it like, just been abandoned kind of thing? So when you're doing that kind of environment, it's kind of important to consider these things. So yeah, but essentially I use paper and pen first usually, and then I move into digital.
So, I mean, for drag artists, the technology that we care the most about is if our phone is going to collect to the to connect to the Bluetooth speaker when we're performing. But I don't know if you've seen these. There are AI accounts, or sorry, there are accounts on TikTok and Instagram where people are using AI to make cartoon characters compete against each other in a drag race format.
Oh.
So Peppa Pig is competing against Homer Simpson in this drag race format, and they use AI to put them in a some kind of outfit as it relates to a theme, just as you would see on Drag Race. And they're actually quite entertaining and quite interesting to watch, to see people use technology in this way, and they have like hundreds of thousands of views. It's quite wild. Also, I have been starting to use AI to prototype how an outfit would look. So if I'm looking to buy something to like a hat or a fascinator, for example, to match my dress, so I will put it in there, dress in this pattern with a black fascinator made out of this material. And then it will kind of show me what it looks like, so I can kind of get an idea as if to if it would look good or not. And I find that that's helpful. I mean, it's only a matter of time before AI comes into our creative processes and to make things more efficient. But right now, I feel like it's very early stages for drag.
Yeah, there's so much possibility. I mean, AI is a big scary beast that is outside of the scope of what we're talking about today, but at the same time, there's so much possibility, opportunity, interesting creative collaboration with technology and with the web at large, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's wild to see people using it to tell stories of Peppa Pig and drag.
So who won? Who won that battle?
I think I can't remember. I think Peppa Pig was an early out. I think Homer Simpson made it further than Peppa Pig, if I'm not
Dope.
mistaken.
That's
Wild.
good. That's good.
Yes, this is a hot topic with AI right now, but I'm not going to go to AI just yet because you just said technology. So for me, technology at its core, it's a tool, just like a paintbrush, just like a pencil, just like a piece of paper. And all of these tools are meant to make our lives easier and I would say better. And so I think when we think about using these tools, we have to think about how it's going to make our lives easier and better, or in this case, our work, our creative work. And I think that's really important to remember as new tools emerge. So, anything from using a digital tool, like an iPad, Emma's drawing on an iPad right now, but Ink Factory was started literally with markers and paper. And we still sell most of probably 80% of our work is, markers on paper. And technology and the markers change all the time. Like yesterday in our creative delivery meeting, we were talking about the nibs and tips of different types of markers and different kinds of inks and how they flow on different kinds of substrates, you know, anything from foam board paper to Eagle cell board. So I would say, you know, that that lens of trying to use technology to make our lives easier and better is where I like to stay and like to try to guide the team on. But also, you have to keep up with technology, right? Because we have, of course, competitors that might do things differently. And I'm sure people have all seen those like explainer videos, for example. And Ink Factory does a version of an explainer video. And, you know, there's a lot of companies that just have like, you know, like clip art type explainer videos. And it's, you know, automated and generated, and it's a very low price point. And that can be right for certain people. But at Ink Factory, we're really into the authenticity of what we do. And so we don't want to detach the human working with another human from the output and the products that we produce in our different visual storytelling services. So everything that we do is going to be very unique. And I think that technology tries to find efficiencies and sort of duplicate and, you know, all the algorithm math that's out there that my brain doesn't quite work, but I'm sure I have algorithms in my head too that I don't know are even working. And I guess I'm rambling a little bit, but at the end of the day, I think that technology should support us in our work and help us. And, you know, we are certainly using AI for things at Ink Factory, from, you know, writing emails that might be kind of tough, to helping with script writing and brainstorming. And we're still learning how to work with AI. But I would say like the biggest technology improvements that we are using are around automations for like our operations of our business, not so much our creativity.
I think it makes so much sense to think about technology and in what it can do for you. And I mean, AI mm-hmm. is this kind of big, scary gray bubble of mm-hmm. unknowing that and what that could look like. But I think for me anyway, and I'm sure for your customers, the human hand and the authenticity and the the kind of bespoke nature of what you're creating is irreplaceable through methods that currently exist in technology.
Oh, totally agree. Yeah. And it's kind of like, I always, when people ask me, because I'm like the token creative in my friend group, often when people ask me about like, you know, am I worried about AI? And I'm just like, I don't think that proper, pure, authentic creativity can be outsourced. It's kind of like comedy, you know, like the nuance of comedy is so specific to who you are talking to and your audience. And I think that art and visual storytelling is the same.
Yeah, I like that comparison a lot. It depends on who's in the room. It depends mm-hmm. on what you're trying to accomplish. Like there's all these different factors that mm-hmm. aren't easily plug-inable to an AI system.
Mm-hmm. But I use Waze all the time to get me places, and I love it.
Yes,
tech can outsource that.
exactly. Gone are the days. This is off topic, but did you ever? This is like late '90s, early 2000s, where mm-hmm. I remember my family going to our local Canadian Tire here in mm-hmm. near Toronto, and getting printed directions to drive to Florida. And us having like a manual, like a 30-page manual of turn-by-turn directions. And if you veer one
quest,
one right turn wrong, you're screwed. But yes, tech has come a long way, and it can work for us for sure.
Oh, yeah. I definitely remember the summer trips helping to navigate out of like the big old atlas, like my family did road trips, and you know, you get one turn wrong, and you never hear the end of it.
Kids these days will never understand.
As a general principle, creativity, narrative, and specifically storytelling and narrative, which is very conceptual, I struggle to find the need for technology in that sort of realm? It's a bit different to UI and UX or things where you're sort of like iterating on on visual concepts constantly. You need to sort of speed up the workflow. I guess the one sort of, I mean, for me personally, like technology doesn't really help with my storytelling or narrative building. The only way I could see that it can help sometimes is because of the nature of this kind of work and it being so conceptual, is that sometimes technology can slow down your ability to just sort of like come up with concepts and be able to sort of communicate them quickly and clearly without spending too much time diving right down a rabbit hole that is going to get shut down by a client. So that's probably where I could see the intersection of storytelling and or narrative and technology, is that maybe it sort of speeds up your ability to sort of come up with concepts, either approve them or revise them quicker and more iteratively without, like this sort of inevitable time sink that can come if with this sort of conceptual work, if there isn't sort of some form of technology that can help you speed up the process. That's probably my opinion on that topic. And aside from that, I mean, I'd say I'm probably maybe I'm a little bit old school with the way that I work. And I guess I hate Figma, like passionately. Like I really hate Figma with passion, because it really, it gives me anxiety being able to, like, when you're in like working in like an agency environment, say, and you like working within a design team, and you can see all the designers working, and it's like this ready, set, go. That just completely actually like it actually like disables my creativity a little bit, because I just get so anxious and overwhelmed by watching everyone go like zzz, and moving around so quickly. That actually kind of can fuck up my flow a little bit. So sometimes technology, that's what I mean, like within this conceptual world, I think technology can be a hinder more than a help, unless it's to do with sort of speeding up the process of being able to sort of like present concepts and approve concepts and revise concepts and stuff like that. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that there's something absolutely to be said for kind of quote unquote old school methods where you're really kind of disconnecting yourself from technology and from everything else that everyone else is doing, so you can have your own opinions, voice, lens, all of the things that are not necessarily being influenced negatively or positively or whatever, but influenced by the environment around you. Yeah, so that makes total sense to me. And I know that you've also kind of are very passionate about this idea of brand identity designers who don't always spend enough time on their own brand identity design. So maybe that fits in here as well. Can you kind of speak to that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I find that a really like ridiculous principle, but you see it time and time again, that there's so many brand designers who they wonder why they don't get jobs, or they wonder why they don't get clients coming to them, but they literally sometimes they don't even have a portfolio out in the world. They don't even have, like, I mean, that's just like the absolute bare minimum of having. I wouldn't even call that a personal brand. That's just like existing within the world. but I think like any brand that a brand designer works on, it needs to have like a strong purpose. It needs to be standing for something. And if you're for everyone, you're for no one. I think that's like applies to branding in general and for personal branding. That if you sort of niche and put your work out constantly into the world and make it known that you sort of work within a certain niche, it does have a huge impact on both like your success, quote unquote, as a designer in terms of like social credibility and stuff like that. But that social credibility then trickles down into being able to like land jobs easier, being able to charge higher prices. Also, within the creative process itself, like it helps a lot with client buy-in and being able to get concepts approved because people have more trust in you based on the brand that you've sort of created for yourself and the rep, more so the reputation and that social credibility that you've created for yourself. I think people like Jessica Walsh as an example within the industry, like good examples of, there's probably so many like talented designers out there and like there are, but you just don't know, you don't even know that exists. And I think Jessica is someone within the industry who's become quite a big name and like almost like a household name within the graphic design world. And it's purely just, I believe, I mean, she's hugely talented, but she's also just, making her presence known within the world and putting her work out regularly and sort of applying the same principles that she would with her own, like the brands that she works on with herself. It's almost like, I think the music world, you see this a lot with like artist brands. And I think if more sort of designers treated themselves as like artists in that sense, there would be a lot more, they'd have a lot more success in terms of, yeah, like getting work, charging higher prices, also having a lot smoother creative process. And yeah, I find it a really frustrating thing to see within the industry, like all these really talented brand designers who just put no time into their own brand. I find it just quite a ridiculous principle, to be honest, but yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of my favorite sayings as well, is something like if you're speaking to everyone, you're speaking to no one. And to add to that, it's like if you're not speaking at all, you're also not speaking to anyone.
Exactly, yeah. Like, how are people meant to know you exist if you don't, like, exist, like,
Yeah.
to circle back to the whole idea of, storytelling, telling a narrative, like that storytelling and narrative that you would create around yourself as a designer, resonates in the same way with clients as a brand speaking to their target audience, So I think it really has a lot of power in the sort of psychology of selling in a way, like just as you would with branding and advertising. Like I think there's a lot of power in applying that same principle to yourself.
In order to do that, in order to kind of exist in the world of today and kind of in the age of global communication, technology is the way that we often do that too. So just to circle back to that question, I mean, I think that tech does play such an important role, perhaps in just like making our own stories known so that we may work with others to promote their stories.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Like, we are in a day and age where there is no excuse not to be able to sort of make yourself known in the world because there are so many technology tools out there, like social media being an obvious but huge one that really has, and I mean, having a website's just like basis, but like I think having a strong sort of social presence and also, there's various social tools I think that technology has made a lot easier for, let's say, my generation of designers to create a reputation for themselves and to create a brand identity for themselves and a strong sort of brand narrative, as opposed to, like, let's say, like the boomer generation of graphic designers that were sort of not even using computers. So there really is no excuse for designers these days not to be using these forms of technology to create a narrative around them, around their own work, and to create a story around their own work and their own persona as a designer.
Just living out my days as a ghost to me.
But I do think Zoom has been very useful because as people have moved away and around, I've been doing a lot of online writing. And also there's, since Zoom has been around a lot, there's now new technology where, even from your workstation, from Logic or from Pro Tools or whatever system you're using to record music, you can actually have the output go directly into Zoom so that if you have a producer on the session, you can start hearing what they're working on as you're writing. So everybody can kind of build things together in real time, which has been really great. 'Cause it used to be just, me on the at the piano and then another person at the guitar or whatever, but now you can actually bring in producers and have these three-way writes and start building a track in a Zoom session. And sharing those stories, if you're talking about storytelling, like I do think that storytelling is more than just literal stories. I do think that there are instrumental ways to paint different things, and create imagery. And the same thing with a track. When someone's building a track, if they're really immersing themselves in the story, they're trying to paint that scene. Like, what would the tempo of this be? What would this be kind of dreamy? Should we add some strings, some synth? Would this be like more energetic and happy? Should I start throwing some beats in there? And we're all just kind of like working together, trying to best paint this moment in time.
Yeah, I think that's such a great example and one that I had not thought of as directly relating to artists and designers and songwriters in this series, which is Zoom, which is something that I mean we used a lot too much over the pandemic, but the ways in which it can integrate with the workflows and tools that you're already using is interesting to hear about for sure.
Yeah, but just like also how it works with they call them DAWs, like you probably know that, like digital audio workstations, and just the way that you can actually have that now go directly into Zoom so that there's also different things people are playing around that decrease the delay so that you can actually play with somebody with so little delay it feels like you're playing together simultaneously.
Wow, that's cool. That's really neat.
So I don't use a ton of technology in my art. Like I use all like physical materials, but then I digitize it. So I think of social media as like the cultural context and the setting for my art. Instagram and my newsletter, my website. This is my studio, it's my gallery, it's my storefront. It's even kind of like the couch in the back of the house where we sit and talk afterward. It really is the setting for my work. And to me, that's a very like value neutral thing. I think that there's a lot of thoughts out there about it. But what I think, when we look back at this time, it's just the cultural context and the setting of where my art happens. Because I don't know, to me, I don't like love it or resist it. I just acknowledge it. And so to me, being kind of an artist who works in an online setting, it just gives me constraints. And I think constraints always make for interesting art. And so when I think about like the tech space, like the digital world that my art lives in, the constraints it gives me for the most part is that my work has to make sense when it's square, in like a square image. And then also that, it can't rely too heavily on like texture, it has to be 2D, all that kind of thing. So it sort of restricts me to certain media in that way. And then I think in terms of the type of work, it's made, I'm always looking for something in my art. I'm always looking for my art to be something that will make a connection with somebody in like literally in like 1 second or less, because that's sort of how long people encounter something for when they're just scrolling through their feed. But then that there's something there that will make a deeper connection to them if they give it like 10 to 15 seconds. Like if they do stop, there has to be then something more. And then also because I am wanting my art, I think, to sustain and to connect with people in deeper ways, and also, selling art is how I make my living. I want then for there to be another layer that if someone buys this art and puts it in their home, that it has another layer of meaning. And so I think I have this sort of this concept for when I'm working like making large canvas paintings, that like if you see something from across the room, you want it to engage you, but then if you come close, you want it to engage you in a new way. And then if you were like live with it over time, you want to engage you in a new way. But I think that's an extra challenge over art that is digitized and pocket sized because you can't fit as much into it. But that sort of rubric has influenced my art tremendously. For better or worse, I have no idea what kind of art I would make if I was not online, if I just made art for myself, or if I made art, only in like an analog space and a gallery space. And I don't think that would have been like more pure. Like that doesn't really like tantalize me as like, ooh, what would my art look like if it weren't for the internet? To me, it's like, I mean, what would I look like if it weren't for the internet? It's almost like it's not really a question that I'm not interested in. But I think that you can take sort of the constraints and the benefits of technology and use them however you want to. And for me, I think those constraints have made my art a lot better. If people always looked at my art for a long time, or if it was a few people in person and stuff, it would be really different. But the challenge of making something that makes sense immediately, but then means more the longer you look at it, is really challenging. Like, I think it's something that will get anyone's creative wheels turning if they're, trying it out for themselves. And it has been like a big challenge for me. So I think that my art is totally, completely just like enmeshed with the technological landscape. But in terms of actually making my work, it's just like paints and paper towels and, water everywhere.
All the best things, the
Yeah.
materials, the
Yes, that
tangible,
tactile stuff.
making stuff, the best, the best. And yeah, it's
Oh,
interesting that
yeah.
you mentioned constraint because, of course, technology has inherent constraint or forces those who use it into a type of constraint. But yeah, I agree that constraint can be this like really interesting catalyst for innovation and something new and yeah, so 'cause I completely am on board with constraint being a very interesting thing to work with.
Yeah.
Sometimes
Yeah.
an important and essential thing to work with.
Absolutely. I feel like if I when I have no constraints, that equals like, quote unquote art block for me. Because it's like if you can do anything, then all of a sudden I can't do anything. So give me an assignment that helps.
Yes, 100%.
I think that's a really tough question to answer. I think in terms of technology, it's made it more possible for us in Canada to know about stories and mythology from other countries. So I think that plays a really big part, makes it easier for people to share stories, and then I can use that for inspiration, right?
Are there any, can you
Yeah.
think of any, I'm even thinking like social media and the ways in which kind of you as a tattoo artist kind of get your message out there or communicate your own style or that interpretation of the mythology and what's possible for potential future clients. Any thoughts on how that side of technology is affected what you do?
I think that social media is essential to tattoo artists. That's really the only way that we can reach our clients. But it does a good job of reaching the right audience, yeah, I think same for finding inspiration. I mean, I worked at Chronic Ink, which was a tattoo studio that was best known for their Asian style work. So I think I was really lucky in where I started, but social media allows us to reach every artist around the world, right? So I can find references for anything, and it varies a lot.
I love that I can connect with people on Zoom all over the globe. I love sharing ideas. I love bouncing ideas off each other. I love starting projects together. And I love seeing projects come to fruition with the minds that we have working together. I think in addition to Zoom, Instagram is a great place, both in number and in the amount of talent that you can see with people and organizations. I have collaborated with people to try to get more inclusive recess equipment on playgrounds. I've collaborated with people to help educators understand the importance of using appropriate special education practices. I've collaborated with parents and community members about why it's important to have accessible features in your community and what it looks like when we can upgrade with simple changes and adjustments to make things even more accessible, not just for physical disabilities, but for neurodiversity and other kinds of disabilities that people may not know are impacted in their, or are impacted with people in the community. So I love the possibilities that Zoom allows, and also Instagram with connections with building your subject knowledge and meeting like-minded people, but also being able to offer those different perspectives to people who are coming to Instagram to learn more and to broaden their perspective a little bit.
Yeah, well said. And I think that, I mean, I think I have a love-hate relationship with Instagram. it's an incredible platform. Obviously, there's the addictive nature and the algorithmic filter bubbles that can happen. But yeah, when we are actively seeking out kind of unique perspectives that are different from our own, trying to learn about a topic from someone who has firsthand knowledge, experience, lived experience in that world, I think it can be such a powerful storytelling medium.
I think that the amount of people who have sent me messages about any topic related to accessibility is just so heartwarming, because people want to know things like, why don't I have a prosthesis? And why do I park my vehicle in reverse every time I park? And that's just to keep myself out of the flow of oncoming traffic. People ask what the impact of my being in a wheelchair is for teaching. We have prospective teachers asking all the time, do you think I could be a teacher with a disability? And the answer is absolutely. You know, how is my visual disability going to impact me in the classroom? And so I'm able to not only connect, but to brainstorm solutions for some people. I've connected with people who work in project management, people who are builders and architects, people who work on roads, people who build, you know, buildings and playground structures, and what accessibility looks like. You know, why can't a wheelchair go across the mulch? Why is that not safe for a wheelchair? Why is that not accessible? What kinds of playground equipment can we put on playgrounds for adults and children who want to enjoy the community? You know, why does the sidewalk have to be clear of debris or planted pots that, you know, are decorative because wheelchairs can't get by? So we've had a lot of discussions around just community and accessibility. And for that, again, I'm super grateful because it gives me a chance to share a new perspective that people who are non-disabled didn't really consider before.
In a way, this is also a paradox because this can go in many ways, but
I think the general principle for me with technology and storytelling, just like anything else, it's always a tool. It's always a tool. And it's something that can be used to speed up the process, to deepen the process, to elaborate and expand in the process of storytelling, adding richness to it, adding depth. But it can also cheapen the experience. It can also take away from and cut corners with the experience of storytelling. Because the process of storytelling for me is really one of an inward journey being revealed to others. Storytelling is this experience of getting to know yourself more through personal experiences in silence, in solitude, in recognition of what it is that you're observing. And when I say solitude, I don't mean that it only happens when you're alone, but it's the recognition of what is happening within you as you are going through your experiences in life. And one side of technology is that it can help us sharpen that awareness and help us sharpen the ability to communicate that story. And of course, with the internet, widespread that story so other people can relate to it and have them develop their own awareness to their own stories through the reading of others. But the challenge with that at the same time is through the exposure to so many people's stories through things like Instagram and TikTok and YouTube videos and blogs online. We are constantly bombarded with so many different perspectives, and most of them not being a true reflection of the context of where we currently are in the world. It can be misguiding to us in a lot of ways. And so it's very important for us to recognize that when people share their stories, and that when people share their advice, and when people share how we should be living, we need to conceptually understand that they are standing somewhere in the world, in their reality, where that piece of advice makes perfect sense for where they are. But where we are in our world, in our society, in our reality, maybe bits and pieces of that advice, that information may be relevant, but not the entire thing. And so, stepping back before technology, when we would share stories, our stories were always shared in local community. It was always about what was happening in the world right around us in that time. And so the relatability was significantly higher. And so there was always a lot more truth and authenticity in those stories because it was so close to home. But because technology has now widespread our stories, we may be hearing something about about a person's experience somewhere across the world. And there can be one piece of information where we're like, yeah, I totally agree with that. And then we accept the entire story as our personal truth. And I feel that that's when we can kind of start hurting ourselves. We can be misguided because the directions that they're giving us, while one step may be accurate and honest, the other steps can be misleading and misguided. And so, if there's anything that comes through this process of technology and storytelling, I really believe it is helping us to develop our ability to discern, our ability to be able to critically look at the stories that we're absorbing, that we're consuming, take the things that serve us, and be able to recognize the things that, while they may be good advice, while they may be well-intentioned, they are not relatable to where we are in our personal journey right now.
Yeah. Context is a word that you use there, and I think that makes a lot of sense to me, certainly. Now, just as a follow-up question, you have been writing a lot more, as I understand, and kind of sharing that information through technology. Any thoughts on that and how technology is helping you to disseminate your stories in new ways?
I wouldn't be writing in the way that I've been writing if it wasn't for technology, that's for sure. I've been writing for at least 10 years, but it's always been in journals that are locked up in a briefcase somewhere at my parents' house. So a lot of these pages have not seen the light of day. And the conclusion that I came to is that it's time to share, it's time to communicate. And so
technology has been such a beautiful tool because it's been allowing me to share my thoughts and my stories and my experiences. And what is lovely about it is that the people that resonate with it will reach out and say, thank you for that story. I find that very relatable. You've given me some perspective. You're making me think about my own life and my own processes. And that's like the greatest compliment I can receive is the thought that my writing is helping someone take a step back from their experience and to look at it. So technology plays a beautiful role in this process. And it's also one of those things where we can't be always monitoring and adding disclaimers into everything that we do and share online. And so I feel there's this relationship of trust between creators and consumers that we are creating with the best intentions in mind, and that we trust you to do what you feel is best with that information, whether it's to completely disregard it and see it as complete phony or just not relatable, whether it's to critique it and to help other people who may be swindled by the information, or to recognize the truths that are relatable in that. And so I feel like technology in that regard is not only helping us share our stories more and faster, we're developing our awareness greater, we're discerning, and we're supporting each other in that development of critique and discernment.
In the next episode, I pose the question, how has the evolution of your own life experiences impacted the stories that you choose to tell through your artistic endeavors? To be continued.